Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Peter Grinspoon. He's author of Aging Well with Cannabis, Feel Better, Sleep Better, and Live Better with Marijuana and CBD, a primary care physician, addiction specialist, and Harvard Medical School instructor. Dr. Grinspoon brings more than 25 years of experience helping people navigate addiction recovery and the evolving world of cannabis medicine. And we'll explore the science, the myths, and the potential benefits of cannabis as we age. It's a fascinating conversation you won't want to miss. Aging Well with Cannabis, Feel Better, Sleep Better, and Live Better with Marijuana and CBD. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. For everything about Peter, go to petergreenspoon.com and follow him on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. Can I call you Peter?
Please.
Welcome to the show. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you're not alone in your exploration because I understand there's a family history of this.
Yeah, my dad, Dr. Lester Grinspoon, was a very legendary cannabis scholar and activist. He wrote a book in 1971 called Marijuana Reconsidered that really provided the intellectual firepower for the legalization movement that we're still seeing today.
The challenge I always think people have, if you go back far enough, it was illegal. Then it became more accepted, et cetera. My only complaint about marijuana is the smoke aspect of it, which in other words, like once you legalize it and your neighbor's smoking it in the backyard, just like regular cigarettes, that smoke comes over to your side of the fence or the wall and you can get affected by it as well.
I agree with that. I mean, if you're outside, it's probably not going to be in a very high concentration, but certainly some people really don't like the smell. As a medical marijuana physician, we rarely recommend that people smoke cannabis. We think that edibles or a little tincture under your tongue is a lot safer. You know, there are a few circumstances. If someone's dying of cancer or they're getting chemotherapy, sure, let them smoke cannabis. But generally, cannabis, as you mentioned, does have things in it that are not healthy. Cannabis smoke, it has, you know, tar, carbon monoxide, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. So I'm not a huge fan of exposing people, especially people that don't like cannabis, to secondhand smoke.
Yeah, no, I can understand. Now, according to your book, I guess it's been legalized in 39 states and the District of Columbia. Were you amazed at how quickly that acceptance was spreading throughout the various states of the United States? Not the federal government, obviously, but throughout the various individual states.
Well, you know, it actually didn't seem quick to me because I watched my dad work on it starting in 1971. When about 12% of Americans supported full legalization of cannabis. And it went up for about a point every year. It went up about a point for every year that he worked on it. And now, you know, 2/3 to 3/4 of Americans support legalization of marijuana. So it's been a 50-year process. Right. We had a lot of myths and nonsense to kind of disentangle from the war on drugs, where the U.S. government wasn't particularly helpful or honest about cannabis. Today, 90% of Americans support legal access to medical marijuana. And name anything else that 90% of Americans agree upon. I mean, it's really amazing. So we're getting there, but it hasn't seemed to me to be a quick process, though it certainly seems to be gaining momentum. And, you know, the states are, the illegality, the criminality in different states seems to be falling like dominoes. So we're really, really getting there.
I want to get into the positive aspects, but just one more thing I want to cover, and that is, like anything, especially in America, something can be abused. So you hear about the marijuana medical card, where you have people that get that card for medicinal purposes, but they really don't need it. They just want to indulge.
I mean, well, in 24 states, you have recreational cannabis legal. More than half of Americans actually live in those 24 states. There's not really an issue in those states. Then you have 16 other states where it's medical only and not recreational. And certainly you can make the argument that not everybody that pretends to be a medical patient actually is a medical patient, though it can be a very fine line between medical use and recreational use. You know, there's a lot of overlapping symptoms of anxiety. You control your anxiety, you socialize more. That's recreational, but it's also treating a medical condition. It's true that to a certain extent, medical marijuana has been a Trojan horse for getting people access to marijuana, but you know, people shouldn't misrepresent things, of course. But at the same time, cannabis shouldn't be illegal. It's safer than alcohol, safer than tobacco, safer than obviously opiates, methamphetamines, all these other drugs. It has medicinal benefits. The war on drugs has been a disaster. We've arrested 20 million people for nonviolent cannabis possession over the last 50 years, mostly people with black and brown skin. It's been horrible. And you can't argue that legalization is a much better state of affairs. So I'm not a big fan of criminalizing what people are going to do anyways. I mean, this is a perfect example. People shouldn't need to pretend they have a medical problem to get recreational cannabis. They should just be allowed to use it like they're allowed to go home and have a beer after work.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. Now, your book, and you've written other books, but this one, again, is called, and I always like to repeat it, it's Aging Well with Cannabis, Feel Better, Sleep Better, and Live Better with Marijuana and CBD. Could you separate out the two for those listeners and viewers, the difference between just marijuana and CBD? And are they intrinsically linked, or can they be separated out?
Well, they're both components of the cannabis plant. The most common component is THC, which is the impairing, intoxicating component. Has a lot of medical uses, but that's what people are using in the recreational side as well, because it gives you the high, the relaxation, the changes in perception that people love. CBD is another component of cannabis, which a lot of Americans are on. Something like 1 in 7 Americans are on some kind of CBD product. CBD is pretty universally supported because you can't have fun with it. It's non-intoxicating. It helps people with chronic pain, anxiety, insomnia, and it's an FDA-approved medication for childhood epilepsy. So CBD is like low-hanging fruit. I always or often start people on CBD because it doesn't have any impairment or intoxication, and it helps people sleep. It helps them with their pain. But often I then add in some THC because they work really well together. And you add the THC in very slowly and work your way up slowly because it's intoxicating and impairing. And a lot of the times the medical doses are much lower than the recreational doses. And you can get people feeling a lot better about their pain and their sleep without significant impairment.
Do you find that it makes sense, even based on your book, that someone who is in later years and it could be helpful for them, should they go and talk to their doctor first rather than first go ahead and buy something that generally would help them, but not sure how to approach it?
Well, that's part of why I wrote the book. I talk about all of this. I, of course, a huge believer in doctor-patient communication and interaction. I think the doctor-patient bond is the most important thing. And I always tell patients to tell their doctors about their medical cannabis use. At the same time, most doctors don't know much about medical cannabis. They haven't been taught very much about it in medical school. And they're often caught flat-footed in these discussions, and they don't really know how to advise patients. I think it's important patients still bring it up, even if their doctors aren't exactly a font of information, because you want to know about, you know, medication interactions and ways in which the cannabis, the doctor certainly would tell them not to smoke it and so forth. Unfortunately, because people can't and don't get information from their doctors, they end up getting their information at the cannabis dispensaries from the bud tenders, the friendly, enthusiastic people who are not medically trained. They end up giving, it's been studied, most of the information about medical cannabis. And that is a horrible state of affairs because they're not medically trained. They mean well. So the key to all of this is, yes, patients need to bring it up with their doctors. And critically, doctors need to urgently get more educated about cannabis, about the harms, the benefits, the things we could treat, the ways we can treat people. If we get doctors educated, the whole system becomes safer and more sustainable.
I'm surprised you haven't created a network of continuing education classes for physicians on this subject, given your background and your dad's background.
Well, in all my spare time. I try to write these books. This book is really a how-to book for patients and for senior people on how to do this safely. For example, bewildering if you're an 80-year-old and you've never been on fried cannabis to go into a dispensary. A million types, types, gummies, tinctures, paraphernalia. And I walk through what it's like to go into a dispensary step by step to make it much, to demystify it and to make it much less stressful. I have some very simple recommendations on how to get started. We start with very low doses and work our way up. And I really think, again, with just education. So I wrote this book and I wrote my previous book, Seeing Through the Smoke, about many of the same topics. So it wasn't specifically aimed at seniors. And it also talked a little bit more about the lifestyle benefits, the fact that cannabis, in addition to helping alleviate pain, anxiety, insomnia, can help people connect with others, connect with nature, enjoy music, art, sex, food better. So I talk about some kind of lifestyle enhancement, not just medical conditions. But I really think we need to educate patients and educate doctors. It's a little bit of a free-for-all out there. And there are a lot of continuing medical education classes. My problem is that half of them are done by like really anti-cannabis people and these like addiction psychiatrists from the 11th century that really, you know, are still fighting the war on drugs. And they tend to be very negative and not talk about the benefits. They still talk about medical marijuana and these like derogatory quotation marks, even though there are 20 million people in this country doing really well. And then there are these pro-cannabis educational sites that are a little bit, you know, overly enthusiastic about the benefits, from my taste, and a little bit, you know, give short shrift to some of the harms. Cannabis, like any other medication, has its harms, can be used in a more or less safe manner, and people need to be educated about the harms. So I agree with you. We need more continuing education right down the middle. The role I've done, I speak to a lot of physician groups, and I write these books so that I know that out there, there's a neutral reference that people can use if they need it.
No, that's great. Chapter 3 in your book, I got depressed reading the title, which is Aging Isn't for the Faint of Heart. I was kind of hoping for a, I don't know, gradual decline as opposed to being worried about the faint of heart aspect of things.
I originally wrote Aging Isn't for Sissies, which is a very common term.
Yes, it is.
And I got in a lot of trouble about how sissy is non-tolerant language and it disparages people. So that's why I changed that. There is a definition of sissies that could be derogatory, but it's also a very common expression that many people use without any harm or intent. But just for the record, it's called that, and I got into a lot of trouble for calling it something else.
But isn't there a way for people to, there's got to be examples in your experience as a doctor, there's got to be examples of seniors who age gracefully and don't really face some of the issues that others face in the world of aging.
Now, my aunt is 99. She is completely with it. She's not in a single medication. It's completely ridiculous. She's an example of that. She's sort of a freak of nature, but it's just amazing to see it. But generally speaking, you know, with vaccines, we started living from 40s to our 70s or 80s. We live a lot longer with nutrition and so forth. You know, we're a wealthy society. I mean, the wealth is getting less evenly distributed every minute. But generally speaking, many of us have access to healthcare and we live longer. And as we live longer, our hips, knees, and backs sort of wear out. We get arthritis. You know, we have trouble sleeping. Our sleep gets worse as we get older. It can be very anxiety provoking getting older. And so cannabis can be, if used effectively and very cautiously and safely, really a remedy for many of the specific ailments that older people, aging people encounter eventually, unless they're my aunt, but generally, eventually they tend to encounter them. And I just think that you could use cannabis in the place of many of the other pharmaceuticals we use. And cannabis can be a lot safer than many of the other pharmaceuticals. I mean, look at pain. Nobody wants to be on opiates. You fall, you get dizzy, you get constipated, you get addicted. Non-steroidals, your ibuprofen, your Advil, they kill your kidneys if they don't give you a heart attack or an ulcer first. I think a little bit of medical cannabis can be a lot safer for older patients.
And you also, to keep it balanced, you also have a chapter called Beyond the Medicinal Lifestyle Improvement. So you're not just taking a stand on speaking for marijuana and CBD, but also in terms of lifestyle changes or modifications as you age as well.
Well, cannabis is or can be fun. That's why millions of people use it recreationally. Now, just because it's fun doesn't mean it's not a medication, which is kind of the funny part. But, you know, and that is a sort of puritanical thinking, you know, because cannabis can be fun, it's not a medication, whereas CBD isn't fun, so it can be a medication. But the fact is, you know, people get more engaged in activities and people can be very lonely. There's an epidemic of loneliness and cannabis can really help people connect together, do activities together. They're not thinking about their pain as much when they're using cannabis. And I just really think it could be helpful in terms of lifestyle augmentation. You know, it's no secret. People have known this for 5,000 years, the cannabis can make nature prettier. It can make music more interesting. It could help you see into art more three-dimensionally. It can make sex feel a lot more intense and sort of really intimate. It could help people with mindfulness to mindfully connect with the present. And, you know, there's no reason why seniors beyond using it medically can't enjoy these other benefits. And as I said before, it could be sort of a fine line between the medical and the recreational. Someone has chronic pain, they're sitting in their apartment, their leg hurts, they use some cannabis, you know, their leg pain isn't hurting as much, then they start doing something fun. I mean, it's sort of recreational and medical.
Yeah, I could see that. And the ability to socialize by not eliminating the pain necessarily, but decreasing the pain, which allows you to socialize in some way, that's very beneficial to human beings.
No, absolutely. And cannabis dulls pain. It doesn't work for extremely severe pain, like broken bone, post-surgical. But for mild to moderate pain that a lot of people suffer from with their arthritis, it's really effective. And not only does it sort of blunt the pain, but it affects the part of the brain that makes that interprets pain as an unpleasant sensation. So people kind of say, I still feel my back pain, but it's not bothering me as much. So yeah, I will go for a walk with a friend. Then when they're walking with a friend, they're not thinking about their pain and they get into this positive feedback cycle.
I want to talk a little about brain chemistry because you just mentioned the brain. I think some people fear marijuana from the point of view that it could affect their brain structure or their way of thinking and it might change their personality. I'm speaking in generalities here. Not everybody thinks that, but there is a segment of population that doesn't want to even experiment with marijuana or CBD because they think that it could affect their personality, their way of thinking, their identity, et cetera, or make them dependent on it.
Absolutely. That's about six different questions. I've seen marijuana change people's personalities much for the worse, and I've seen it change people's personalities much for the better. If they are smoking all the time, puffing on their vape pen 60 times a day, addicted, people do get addicted to cannabis. It's not as addictive as alcohol or tobacco or opiates or methamphetamine, but people do get addicted to it, and they're just kind of, you know, not socializing and just, you know, really all their emotional relationships is with the cannabis, the drug, their personality obviously has been changed for the worse. I've seen other people come out of their shells, have their ADHD treated better, have their pain treated better, have their sleep better, and they're blossoming socially. So I've seen cannabis worsen people's personalities, and I've seen cannabis really, really help people's personalities. Now, it does affect our brains, but not in a permanent way. There is some concern that young teens, like 14, 15, 16-year-olds, don't want to blast their brains out with cannabis. That's kind of a no-brainer, no pun intended, a no-brainer anyways, because we just don't want these kids using cannabis for social reasons. Teenagers are more likely to get addicted. They don't learn how to socialize, how to self-soothe. They just smoke their problems away. But also, it can affect the teenage brain. There's research suggesting that it might affect the teenage brain. A lot of this research is inferential because we can't give 1,000 teenagers cannabis and give 1,000 teenagers placebo and see if there's more brain damage. That's not ethical. So a lot of it's like inferential. But as you get older, it does not hurt your brain. Cannabis does not contribute to dementia at all, which is unlike Benadryl, which is unlike Ambien, which is unlike Valium, the benzodiazepines. A lot of these pharmaceuticals that older people are on do contribute to dementia, and cannabis doesn't do that. So again, it's nuanced. You want to use it reasonably. If you start to get addicted to it, you want to get help. You don't want to be blasting your brains out as a 14-year-old with it. But as you age, I can't emphasize this enough. I think it's likely, if used correctly, safer than many of the pharmaceuticals that we're currently using.
Well, it seems like your approach is balanced in that you recognize that it can be addictive, but at the same time, it could be beneficial. And it's that I think what you're presenting is a common sense approach, which unfortunately a lot of the people in the world and in this country don't necessarily have what used to be called common sense. And they tend to overdo things. So they would tend to abuse or overuse something that could work for them. Because if a little bit is good, then a lot is going to be even better.
No, absolutely. Though one thing about cannabis, this is usually true, not always. My dad used to say this, is that people titrate to their own level of comfort. If people take more
cannabis, titrate?
Titrate, yeah, take the right amount to their own level of comfort.
Okay.
Because if you take more cannabis, you could feel awful. I don't know if you've ever had the experience, but anybody who takes a brownie that's stronger than they intended, you get an anxiety attack, you get panic. It's really, really an awful experience. So for many people, taking more isn't better. Taking more is worse. Sure. I mean, I know in my experience, if I were to take the right amount, I'd feel really good. I'd be social. My brain would be firing on all cylinders. I'd be, you know, have interesting ideas. But if I took too much, you know, at a party, it would be a disaster. I'd be introspective and anxious. You have to take the right dose. So yeah, unlike cocaine, the more you take, the better you feel. Opiates, the more you take, the better you feel. So cannabis is a little bit more complicated because it can cause anxiety and feelings of dysphoria if you take too much, which doesn't mean it's not addictive, but it just means it's a little bit more nuanced than some of the other drugs.
When did this negative wave begin for marijuana and CBD? In other words, does it go back to the 40s?
Cannabis was a widely respected medication in the United States from the late 1800s to the early 1900s. It was in the U.S. Pharmacopeia, put in the U.S. Pharmacopeia list of effective medications in the 1850s. Then with the war on drugs, it originally started in 1937. They criminalized cannabis, not for health reasons, but for a lot of very, very racist reasons, which I go into a lot in my book, and for competing commercial interests. You know, the paper industry, the silk industry, the biofuels industry, they didn't want hemp as a competitor. And yeah, there are a lot of reasons. And so starting in 1937, it has been illegal. And the destruction from having it illegal has just been profound. And, you know, as I mentioned, there have been like tens of millions of arrests, racially focused arrests. Blacks and whites use cannabis at the same rate. And blacks are arrested four times as often as whites. When you get arrested, especially if you're a person of color, it could really affect your employment, your housing, your education. So the criminalization of cannabis has been far worse for people's health than the actual use of cannabis. And then Richard Nixon in 1971 started his war on cannabis. And then it started lightening up in the 1970s under Carter. Then Reagan cracked down with the Just Say No, which, you know, just arrested a lot of people, three strikes throughout, put them in prison. And now it's been lightening up since the 1990s. And we're, again, heading in the right direction. But we, you know, there's just still a lot of myths and misinformation that I work really hard on trying to correct in my book and in my public speaking.
Does it help that you have that medical background and you went to Harvard? So you have the pedigree for credibility in the sense of talking about this.
I think it does, because I'm taking a opinion, which I tend to think is like 100% correct, that's different from like the orthodoxy, for example, in addiction psychiatry. The younger addiction doctors aren't against cannabis, but again, it's some of these old 11th century dinosaurs that are still really, really against it. And I think it does help with the pedigree and the credentials, given that I'm taking a point of view that's like very, very different from like, you know, they think it's a satanic weed, it doesn't help people, everybody gets addicted. And I'm taking what I think is a much more accurate view that actually represents the phenomenon of real people who take cannabis. So I think it frees you up a little bit to take a more progressive position if you have strong credentials.
I think too that you just a moment ago said, I believe you said it was your opinion, or you think that, but a lot of this is based on scientific research, starting with your dad way back when. But in other words, it's not just your opinion. It's your opinion based on your own research and findings, as well as your dad and others as well in the field. Would I be correct?
No, absolutely. And there's better and better research. During the war on drugs, most of the research was focused on finding harms with cannabis. That's the only thing they would fund. You know, the National Institute of Drug Abuse, you had to lower something to get funded to study cannabis. You had to lower sperm count or motivation or IQ. None of those turned out to be true. Now, finally, there's more neutral resource. It's not more neutral research. We're not trying to prove that it's satanic lettuce. We're actually saying, does it help? Does it hurt? If it does help, how can we use it safely? So the research is getting much better. So what I say is based on research, but there's been a huge finger on the scale away from benefits towards harms during the war on drugs. So we're still digging out from a lot of really, really bad science.
From the medical community itself, not necessarily the dinosaurs you referenced, but the general medical community, are you getting a different reaction to your work now than 10 years ago?
People are really supportive. A lot of doctors' groups are desperate to learn more, and they invite me to speak about it. They're listening to their patients. They're hearing how the patients are doing so well. They're They're really not being judgmental. And doctors are definitely coming around. Some doctors more than others. You know, on the one hand, it's very hard to find an oncologist that's anti-cannabis because they see it helping almost all of their patients with the chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting, the weight loss, the pain, the anxiety, the insomnia of cancer. So all oncologists virtually support medical marijuana. On the other end of the spectrum is the like adolescent and young adult psychiatrists who see the rare but very serious and concerning cases where cannabis contributes, I don't want to say causes, but contributes to psychosis in young people. Mm-hmm. And they tend to overgeneralize and think that cannabis does this to everybody. So what a doctor thinks about cannabis depends on his or her vantage point into cannabis. However, the general doctors, the primary care doctors like me, they're all swinging in favor of cannabis because they're seeing how much suffering it helps alleviate in their patients. And at the end of the day, medicine is as much about alleviating suffering as it is about diagnosing and treating diseases.
Right. Or even maybe you can't cure it, but you can at least moderate the pain and deal with it on that level.
Why let people suffer? I never understood that.
Yeah. Before I let you go, one last thing. What would you like people to take away? The main point, if there are so many different important points, but the main point that you would like people to take away from reading your book, again, it's called Aging Well with Cannabis, Feel Better, Sleep Better, and Live Better with Marijuana and CBD.
Cannabis is a medication just like any other medication. It has its harms and it has its benefits. It doesn't work for everybody and it has to be used safely and mindfully. Ideally, you work with a physician who knows about cannabis to help guide you. And it can really, really be effective in helping alleviating suffering, especially in older patients. But it's not a miracle cure. So people just have to remember, like any other medication we use, it works for some people. It doesn't work for others. It works for some conditions, not others. And people just have to respect it and use it carefully to get on it very carefully. And then just see if it helps them. It'll help a lot of people, but not everybody.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Dr. Peter Grinspoon, author of Aging Well with Cannabis, Feel Better, Sleep Better, and Live Better with Marijuana and CBD. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org and all the usual places. And for everything about Peter, go to petergrinspoon.com and you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. And Peter, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for the great questions and the great conversation.
Same here. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.